Hello and welcome to this special bonus episode of Star Wars Universe Podcast. Disney folks decided that it wasn't enough just to give us Andor, that they had to slip in Tales of the Jedi at the same time, and so we've got to do some coverage on it. Today, big spoiler warning for Tales of the Jedi, so if you've not seen it yet and you plan to, check out now, because even as I describe this episode, it's going to involve a spoiler. 3, 2, 1, spoiler. This is mostly, the show is basically... It's divided up, I think, by time, but that doesn't quite work. But it is, over the 6 episodes, you get 3 stories about Ahsoka and 3 stories about Count Dooku. Today, we'll be talking about the episodes about Ahsoka, which are actually episodes 1, 5, and 6. If you're confused, yes. And we'll be doing another one about the Dooku episodes, which is 2, 3, 4. And we're doing it all with myself, Matthew, regular non-host guest Paul Hoppe, and returning guest Professor Matthew Capel. All that more after a commercial break. That if Disney isn't advertising in here, they're doing something wrong.
We have no control.
No, yeah, no control. Now that One Direction song is stuck in my head.
I fortunately don't know that One Direction song. I know no Direction songs.
Nope. It is a much dirtier song than you would think would be when you think about it.
I don't have any thoughts about Wonder. Anyway, let's talk about Star Wars.
Waking up.
No. I said I don't have it in my head. I don't want it in my head.
And now here's finally the ad break. Welcome back. We have stopped that direction. We are back in the direction of Star Wars and of Tales of the Jedi. And let me first just ask you, I'm always thrilled to get more Star Wars content. Having this released in the middle of Andor, literally the same day, meaning I had to stay up till 5 a.m. to watch everything right as it came out, because I'm a nut job. What'd you all think? Like, did you like having something even more? Would you have preferred that this was released after Andor when there wasn't something else coming out? What'd you all think of, like, how it being released and what this was?
I have no opinion.
Okay, that's fair.
They provided me with content. I wanted the content. I'm glad it came. I didn't have to watch it as soon as it came out. I did, but I didn't have to, and I was totally fine with if I didn't get to watch it for a few weeks, I would have been okay. So I'm just glad they released it, and as soon as it's done, they should release it because there are people who want to see it as soon as it's done, and I'm on their side.
Okay.
Yeah, I think earlier is always better in terms of just like, just give it to me, you know. I'm on record as saying I don't like shows coming out weekly. I prefer them to all come out at once. Like, make your thing and then give it to me. This one did come all out at once on the same day as a show that's coming out weekly. So that I guess that's the best and worst of both worlds. also, it pains me to say this, like having grown up in New York City and feeling like, if any place is any sort of part of my identity, you know, New Yorker is like a part of my identity, but like West Coast, Best Coast, like, you know, it, like if you want to watch these shows for the purpose of watching these shows when they come out, it's good to be in Pacific time zone. And I mean, I'm just envious of people in Hawaii, you know, but
that's very fair. It is 2 o'clock for me, 3 o'clock for Matthew, midnight for you.
Exactly.
That makes a difference.
Exactly.
Yeah. I kind of wish it wasn't during Andor, or at least not even on the same day. Like,
just pick a different day. Just make it Friday or Tuesday.
Being said, it was new content. I was really excited for it. I was glad I got to see it, and I'm glad we're going to talk about it. And Matthew, let me kind of ask you overall, because for anyone who's listening to our Andor episode, which will have probably come out maybe the day before this one, maybe a couple days, maybe an hour before this one, depending on how I edit things. We often talk with you a lot about myth and. How Andor is very much not a mythological story. This felt, I mean, the whole name of it, Tales of the Jedi, that sounds like a book of myths. Like, what was kind of your overall take on this in terms of the way they're telling story and what they're doing?
I think this was supremely important in that context. And I'm just going to put it at the feet of Dave Filoni, I guess. If you think about the film series, you have the possibly virgin birth of Anakin and the kid from nowhere, Luke, who's a secret prince, and wandering in from the wilderness as a hero in Kidu in Rey. We have a mythological underpinning for Ahsoka now. And I think that was, it was not the best of the three episodes on Ahsoka, but I think that's exactly what it was there for. Give us the, like, Raised by Wolves feel.
I like that, yeah. And certainly the, I had some major problems with the first episode, and I'm thinking Paul probably did for even deeper reasons than I did. But I did love that part of, yeah, the kind of, like, her being much more in tune with nature than her mother was, and kind of the rest we got. And how well it tied into the, like, we hopefully we've all seen the episodes of Clone Wars in the wonderful season 7 where the clones turn on her and she has to be ready to fight them. And having this be the setup for that, I just felt was so powerful. Yeah, I think overall I'm very happy they made these. I hope they make them a lot more. I would have hated if they came out one, like 15 minutes once a week would have been very frustrating. I think it was maybe like the three Ahsoka episodes and then the three Dooku episodes another time. That would have been fine. I'm not quite sure why they did the timing of like one episode being about Ahsoka and then a couple about Dooku. And there's definitely some complaints I had about the stories. But I think overall, just this idea of let's dive more into the backgrounds of these characters. Let's talk more about like the time of the Jedi, because even Clone Wars, I mean, we're getting the sunset of them. The High Republic books are now really giving us the time of the Jedi, and I'm really enjoying that. And this isn't going that far back, but especially with some of the Dooku stuff, it was giving us more just like day in the life of the Jedi before everything fell apart. And I'm really enjoying that.
I love the idea of this series. I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I love the ideas of most of the individual episodes. I did not like the execution of a lot of them, and to not talk specifically about anything in the Dooku arc, but just like I felt like 3 15-minute episodes just doesn't give that arc justice. Like I feel like that could have been like a 13-episode full season of animation, and then Ahsoka could have her own thing like that. So overall, the whole thing to me felt like there was like a sort of rushed feeling to me. It's like almost like the opposite of Andor, you know? It's like a fast burn. I love the idea of anthologies in general. I often find myself like disappointed by them, but like I like the idea of having a bunch of just individual stories, you know? And here those stories really do add up to two specific kind of arcs, right? And I think putting it together in this manner in a 6-episode thing was like a little weird and like didn't quite work great for me. I watched the first episode the night Andor came out. I remember saying to you, I was like, you know, I think it makes sense to watch Tales of the Jedi first because Andor is obviously going to be better because it's like one of the best shows ever on television. So like, I want to watch that last. So I watched it first and and loved it, you know, outside of a couple of little quibbles that are in our other episode. And then watched, I want to say half or two thirds of the first episodes of this. I walked out in the middle of it and it completely ruined my night. And then I came back in and saw the end of it. And I guess I would say like I liked the end of the first episode, but I found the beginning of the first episode disgusting. And like it made me angry and like not want to talk to humans for like a long time.
Let's talk about that because I think people who have heard your talk about animal issues and the like can probably guess. And I haven't actually heard what it is you upset you are, but I guessed enough that I thought about sending you a message being like, be careful if you watch this.
Right, like you might not love this.
People who remember our Bad Batch coverage can probably also guess. But yeah, Paul, what was your problem with the first episode?
Yeah, I mean, the first episode is about Ahsoka's mom taking like, I think her 1-year-old baby girl into the woods with a gun to go kill like a, you know, space deer and then like watch it dying and tell her 1-year-old daughter, oh, look at this dying animal, you have to face it, and like then killing it. And like, I don't know, I think that's disgusting. Like I understand that's like an element of their culture or something, you know, but like I think most human cultures are like pretty gross in a lot of ways, and by most I mean like almost all. Absolutely, including all of the ones that I have, you know, grown up in and around, mm-hmm. you know, just to be very clear on that, like, you know, like American culture and even like New York culture, as I mentioned, you know, like,
right.
I just think humans do awful things. And when humans kind of codify that awfulness and then say like, oh, well, this is just the way we do things. Like, I definitely don't give like a pass for that. But yeah, I mean, if like if she didn't have a gun, if she had like a bow and arrow or something and like they were like, just very technologically primitive. Like, it might not have even bothered me at all, really, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact that they have guns and that they're in this, you know, I mean, the level of technology that exists, I understand in her civilization, you know, in their village, it's like they're not that technological, right, compared to other parts of the right. galaxy. But, like, yeah, I just found it very unpleasant to watch, but also I was like, oh, this is what they're doing. And, like, I started to walk out, then I kind of came back, I'm like, yeah, that's... And like then I came back in like a few minutes later, I guess. Lee was still watching it and she kind of filled me in sort of what I missed. And like, you know, Ahsoka not really befriending, but sort of like convincing the giant sort of saber-tooth wolf-like creature to not eat her, like I thought was nice, you know? Like, I think there was, like, something there. And the image of her, like, riding back to her village on top of it was, like, very cool. It was, like, a little reminiscent of, like, Princess Mononoke. But, like, also, it's, like, well, you know, she didn't exactly make friends with them. And, like, this, like, giant, like, wolf is, like, basically being portrayed as this, like, monster, right? But, like, it might just, like, be a carnivore that actually has no other options, right? And it's just, right. like, eating food. And, like, you know, I think the Togruta have options. Like, I think they grow things also, you know? So, to me, like, killing and eating animals, there's, like, for me, like, there's just, like, there's a technology threshold, basically, you know? And to mm-hmm. me, like, once humans pass that, like, I'm just not okay with it. And before that point, it's, like... okay, you're existing and you're just trying to survive. Fine, you do what you do, you know? But, like, past a certain point, it's just like, yeah, you have an option to not do that. Stop doing that. And then the fact that, like, her parents, I think, had, like, a, like, you know, like, South Asian Indian accents. I think that's sort of supposed to be the kind of Togruta, whatever, mm-hmm. like, the stand-in, you know? I think, like, and the fact that that's the part of the world where, like, the most vegetarianism has come from. You know, with like Jainism and Buddhism and like there's
and where tigers, you keep calling it a wolf, to me it's very much a tiger.
Oh yeah, no, I think you're right.
Yeah,
and tigers have been hunted almost to extinction. I mean, much more so, to be clear, by like white colonizers than like the people there. But yeah, I think that's there's a lot of things about that don't line up well.
Yeah, so all that just didn't really sit well with me. And then I actually stopped. I watched the end of that episode. I was like, all right. And then like I, like, couldn't even sleep well that night. I don't know. And then, and woke up early. And then the next day, like, I had a day. And then last night, like, I watched the other five episodes, kind of trying to be like, all right, that episode was what it was. Let's just approach the rest mm-hmm. of the series kind of fresh, right? Because it's an anthology. So it's like, you know, I can really have a very, I mean, The Mandalorian, right? There were several things that I was talking about. I was like, I really didn't like these certain episodes. And then the last episode of the last season, the second season, was like one of my favorite Star Wars things ever. So it's like, you know, sometimes it is just like, you know, they gave us all six episodes at once. You know, we have the choice. Watch them all.
Yeah.
Watch some of them, you know, pause, whatever. It's up to us. So I like that they released them all at once so that I could choose to watch one and then come back to it exactly when it felt right for me, which was yesterday. So,
yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think I was definitely bothered by that scene. I think not as much as you were. But, like, you know, for those who don't know, I'm not a vegan. I do eat meat. Paul and I's conversations about this have... I don't think I would have been bothered in the slightest before you and I have talked about this so much. Because I think one of the things that you really helped me understand is that, like, not only do we kill animals for meat, but that, like, so much of our culture is based around like completely like devaluing that life and not seeing that life as anything but for us. And like, you know, now I still eat meat. I eat a lot less of it. But more importantly, I try to avoid factory farmed meat and eat only like locally raised, ethically raised kind of animal. And I think a lot of vegans in the audience have been like, what the hell? There's no such thing as ethically raised meat. It's all unethical.
Right. But there are more torturous and less torturous conditions in which, right. like, that is a exactly. real difference, right? It's like, you can put people in prison and you can be against prisons, but be like, mm-hmm. well, this prison has lava on the floor and this prison doesn't, yeah. you know, this prison forces you into labor, you know, slave labor, basically, right? And mm-hmm. this other prison doesn't. And it's like, those are yeah. different things.
Definitely. So. And I feel like, as I said, because of that, one of my big, in some ways, there were parts of this that I felt okay with, because it's clear this wasn't like factory farming, and like
right.
she made references to like honoring the animal and like honoring the spirit of it and all this kind of stuff. But it did, again, like the idea of taking the 1-year-old out there because like, I'm going to kill an animal so that you can better understand death.
Yeah, it's she like, was fridging the animal, literally, right?
Like, yeah, it was, literally.
She's killing the animal to cause an emotional reaction in her child. Also, like,
right.
children and guns, like maybe not in the same place. But anyway.
And I think, Matthew, I definitely want to hear you jump in. Actually, I'll kind of pause there because I have some thoughts about where it went. But just kind of, Matthew, in terms of just like that killing scene, how did it strike you?
Exploitative. So before we started recording, we were briefly talking about the Horizon Zero Dawn games, mm-hmm. Which is a PlayStation game that steals Native American looks a lot. And I felt like this was the same kind of thing. Like it was
yeah.
an attempt to steal little cultural artifacts from Native American cultures, specifically North American Native American cultures, and use them to establish a certain kind of realism for the people being depicted. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it failed. It failed.
Yeah.
But I didn't have anywhere near the reaction Paul did, but it gave me pause for a second. Yeah.
Yeah,
As an anthropologist, it gave me pause.
Yeah, cause even just as I said, like on the one hand, it's not fact. There is the respect that they have, but as I think about it, and also as you say it, that whole like you know her using what are motifs we think of with North American indigenous folks, it's kind of playing a little almost into the noble savage kind of
yes.
mythology of like well they have different we can't judge them as different ethical standards, which like yeah it didn't. Yeah, because it didn't feel like it was like Togruta. It felt like, oh, look, Togrutans are indigenous, therefore they're American indigenous or right. something like that.
Which also, you know, I mean, generally we don't use the term, but have historically been referred to as Indians, which then is weird that then they also had Indian accents, but not this,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like that was just mm-hmm. other this little thing that just felt like weird to me. I'm like so I don't know. Like... Yeah. Yeah, it was just I everything that you're saying, Matthew, Professor Matthew. I also felt that as well, right? Maybe not as acutely as an anthropologist may, but like right. I was feeling that was kind of they were trying to use that, and then it just felt weird to me that like I don't know, like they're like Indian and Indian, but obviously like we don't. I mean, for a long time when I like learned that you could use other words, I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds better, right? To not,
yeah,
you know,
let's not name them over someone getting lost,
right? Perhaps. Exactly, exactly. But then like that also you coincidentally like happened to have her parents, which like I'm fine with her parents having, you know, South Asian like Indian accents, like that's cool. There's no reason anyone individually can't. But, like, it just feels weird. Like, sometimes, like, some of the things in The Phantom Menace, right? It's like, there's no reason that the Trade Federation characters can't have, like, they can't have Japanese accents, right? But, right. like, if you give them Japanese accents and then you give them a bunch of, like, racial stereotypes, and I'm not even sure if it was Japanese actors or if it was, like, not Japanese actors doing some kind of accent or what, like a Hank Azaria, Apu kind of thing. Like it felt a little bit of that to me, which just, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. I think they had already established in the Clone Wars that often like Togruta natives have that kind of an accent.
Right.
So I don't think they came up with that accent for this, but yeah, I think this is a good time of rethinking those things. And yeah, it's that kind of like, so maybe think about this
with with the Twi'lek French accent, right?
They're exactly. just
like right.
doling yeah. out, they're doling out accents to natives.
Yeah.
To non-humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like one of my favorite...
I mean, the way they've doled out Diego Luna's accent to Canary, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like Mexican accent.
I will. So for me, the where I thought the episode got a lot better is where, you know, the child starts to have interaction with the tiger.
Mm-hmm.
In part because A, it was just they let the visuals tell the story. There's almost no dialogue in the second half. And it's funny you mention Professor Mononoke because Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
Because this. All of these episodes, but especially this first one, felt like if Studio Ghibli did Star Wars.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the animation is, I think, the most beautiful I've ever seen from Star Wars. Like, it's just incredibly well done animation. And to me, I think you're right. I don't know to what extent she befriended the tiger or she just, like, force mind controlled it.
Right. Used the tiger.
I think what we're supposed to see is that everyone else saw a monster.
Right.
She saw another sentient living being, and she kind of like connected with it as an equal.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we don't exactly know, but certainly that was the impression I got, and that her treatment of the animals was distinctly different from everyone else's. And that, on the one hand, it's like, oh, so she has mind control power. She's a Jedi. Right. But I also think part of being a Jedi is having this sort of like compassion and empathy for all life, not just...
Yeah.
Like what you think of as like sentient, you know, intelligent, quote unquote, life.
Yeah, for sure. And that part, that aspect, I appreciated. And so like if the thing was like her mom takes her baby off into the woods to just like go camping or something. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, then the tiger basically captures Ahsoka and then Ahsoka befriends it. Like that to me, like could have been like a really beautiful thing, you know, and it's just like that they added those two things together, and it just I did not like.
Yeah.
As an anthropologist, I'm going to jump in again though, because if they went out like picking fruit, it's not a rite of passage, right? And fair. It was clearly trying to be a traditional rite of passage.
Yeah.
I just lectured on Nelson Mandela talking about his rite of passage in his autobiography, mm-hmm. Which was, you know, he's like 12 and all of the people in his group, they're not technically a tribe, they're more of a band. All of the people of that age, they all get together, they sit in a row. Along comes the guy who does it, who cuts off their foreskin. And then they have to put ash onto the wound and then take their foreskin out into the wilderness and bury it. And that's how they become men. And it felt like it was supposed to be a rite of passage that we as Americans don't really get. We don't understand very well. I mean, I got my driver's license and I can drink is about it.
I was going to say, I did in a course I took on religious anthropology and mythology, they did reference the idea of getting your driver's license as an American rite of passage, which for me, as someone who grew up in New York City and thus got my driver's license when I was 25, made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. But like, which I got when I was 38 and living in New Jersey, finally.
Yeah. We're now on a deep tangent land. But no, I think that's fascinating. I think he's right. And again, stuff like this, like I think the killing of the animal, I think, is always going to trouble me and Paul, I think, trouble you much, much more as well, which I totally understand and have all the respect for. It also feels to me like the more detail we're getting into, I don't think would bother me quite as much if it wasn't for Andor. Like, I feel like the bar is, like, if I watched this after the prequels, I'd be like, this is Shakespeare.
Right, this was fantastic,
you know? But Mando and some of the other stuff has just raised the bar. And again, also, I think the really important detail is that, like, as far as I know, tigers don't kidnap people.
Right. But
meat, you bite, like, that animal has to work very closely to, like, pick it up by the diaper and carry it off that way.
But it's not a tiger.
I think you're about to say that.
I mean, it's a space tiger. Oh, go ahead, Matthew. Yeah.
Well, it's Mowgli. It's, you know, it's the Jungle Book. I mean, they're just like riffing on Jungle Book stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't need them to be realistic about the space tiger any more than I need, you know, Tarzan and the chimpanzee to be realistic.
Right.
Because it's just not going to be.
Yeah.
It's just like God says to turtle, you know, or like, you know, whatever it is. It's
exactly.
Like proto embodiment of or like, you know, the serpent in Christian story, Jewish stories.
But also even
and Muslim stories.
Even like we don't know if this animal behaves like earth animals, right? Like
it's
not literally a tiger.
But I think what it is therefore it's very clearly not just a wild beast that will come and attack you and should be shot on sight. The way that it
should be
treated.
Yeah, well,
what?
Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, just when you ended that sentence with "should be shot on site."
Is it "shouldn't be"? Shouldn't be.
Oh no, I know, but I'm saying that like just be. No, never mind. We can move on.
So we're a little punchy. This was supposed to be for a while. This was supposed to be 15 minutes, and we've just spent 15 minutes on the opening scene of the opening episode.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Okay. There were only two scenes in that episode, though. So
yeah,
that's a valid point.
So then we get into her lifetime arc, and like, with Dooku's, I feel like there's actually some more common threads. Here, I do feel like it is three distinct chapters of her life.
Yeah.
And so the second one is all about, we're getting more into her training, and specifically the idea of like Anakin wanting to train her to fight clones. And I thought this episode was absolutely brilliant. I really loved it. I felt like it. It's heartrending because someone has pointed out, like, will Dave Filoni ever give us a piece of content that doesn't pull on our heartstrings about Order 66? And so far, the answer is a definitive no. We might change that in the future. And this one hit me really hard, but I just thought it was so well. It said so much more about Anakin's character and his connection to her. It was a very simple story, but I thought it was very effective. What'd you all think of it?
I loved this one. Like, there was one episode that I unequivocally loved. It was this one. I mean, you know I'm here for a training montage, right? Like, basically, you give me a training montage, I'm pretty happy. I thought overall it was a very good training montage. You know, there could have been a little bit more kind of concrete, maybe try doing this instead, try doing that instead. That wasn't really what it was about. I think it was more about Anakin being like, you know, she's learned all the skills. She needs the reps to get the practical application to be able to get the most out of her skills, right? If the first time you actually have to practically use your skills, you might get killed, well, then either you're going to succeed that one time or you're dead, right? So, like, this was like she got to have these repetitions against clones, against some of the best clones too, right? This was the 501, right? It wasn't just like just any clones. And compared to just practicing, you know, good against remotes is one thing, kid, you know.
Good against the living. That's a great quote to bring in. That was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, there was a couple things going on there. I think that's definitely 100% one of them. I think also there's it's funny, I'm going to make a comparison to like poker or chess. Mm-hmm. Paul, when you talk about poker, this is something you've covered a lot, that like a lot of the computer models will teach you how to play against opponents who are playing, you know, game theory optimized ways of playing poker. And that's great, but that sometimes there's the like, okay, so if you believe that the opponent is behaving rationally, you can draw conclusions. Not all poker players play rationally, myself very much included. And to me, I think that was also part of what you're saying. It's like, you can somewhat predict that drones are going to do these things. Living creatures are going to do completely random things sometimes that might actually be the most brilliant plan you've ever thought of, or might be totally stupid. But if you're not ready for them to do something like that, you're going to be caught unexpected and be in trouble. And so I think that was kind of another layer of it, of both the like, I want you to get more reps in, but also I want to make sure that you're ready against a variety of things, not just machines.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like this is during the Clone Wars, right? Mm-hmm. And she has been, they fight droids in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what she's basically needed to defend herself against. But he's like, that's the world isn't all droids, right? Yeah. Like, if you really want to have top-notch skills, you need to practice against the living as well, right? Yeah.
Even in the Clone Wars, you know, sometimes they fight against Geonosians, or they fight against, like, the people on Raxus, or, like, you know, other living creatures.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, I do want to, like, just shout out to droid rights, but, like, you know, the remotes don't seem like they're, like, they feel like they're just fully programmed, not, like, sentient kind of, you know,
They're not screaming in terror in ways that we, the audience, are supposed to laugh at.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the poker thing is like, yeah, against poker's almost the opposite, where it's like, oh, well, you could beat humans, sure. But like, you know, you can't beat the computer. You know, that's not a thing. But Where here, it's like the humans may be better than the droids, but they also in some ways may be more predictable, you know, where like you can reach out with your feelings and sense how they're feeling, right? And so there's like you have other tools at your disposal that she was able to, you know, learn to use. And like I could have watched a longer version of that, but I actually felt like that was one where the time length, where the format actually was very appropriate, because it was basically like she's doing a test, right? The test is going well, and Caleb's like, wow, she's so amazing. But like then it's also like Anakin's like, no, we gotta really test you, you know? And then they do some training, and then they cut to, you know, Order 66, which was heartbreaking, and it puts into context, you know, one of the already best episodes ever. Adds more to that. And that, like, the first episode made me like Star Wars less. This episode made me like it more, you know? So, like, I feel like this episode fully redeemed, or at least partially redeemed, I don't know. Like, you know, and that's the curse of prequels and post and sequels, is, like, they give you another context where either you can appreciate something more on another level, or it can, like, ruin it for you, you know?
Yeah.
Potentially, if you like it.
It very much reminded me of my favorite Dave Filoni quote about Ahsoka, which I actually kind of sort of know. Because he said, Anakin trains Ahsoka over and over again to fight better. But when in the final analysis, you realize that he's been training her to fight Vader the whole time.
Oh, God, I love that. Oh, I get chills just hearing that because it's so true.
Yeah.
And this was part of that to me, very much so. And the fact that she also does a couple of the moves that she will do during Order 66 was kind of cool, too.
Yeah, she does almost the same choreography one thing where she's on, like, the platform, right? And then goes through the
Yep.
And even though, I mean, the scene we get from Order 66 is, what, maybe 3 seconds? Like, it's not a drawn-out thing. It's just a very quick, those images are so iconic, you know immediately what's happening.
Yeah.
There was also one other, maybe I'm headcanoning here, but I think there's one other dimension of what he's doing here, which I would only think of if I didn't know this so much about his character. You know, one of the things that the Clone Wars establishes is that for most of the Jedi, they have to be very detached from the clones in order to be able to, like, order, you know, okay, 2,000 of them have to die in this attack so that, like, 50,000 of them can survive in this overall battle or something like that. And Anakin fights that. Like, he becomes emotionally connected to these clones, and that's a big part of a lot of both why he's, like, I think he's a better Jedi than most of the Jedi as Anakin, and that's also part of why he falls, because they don't have any support for him to deal with the stuff. I mean, he has a lot of agency. He makes a lot of awful choices, to be clear, but, like, that's, to me, part of the tragedy of his fall, of his character. And to me, like, compare her to some of the other Jedi, Ahsoka is now a character who knows that the Jedi can that the clones can defeat her. Mm. She knows that the clones can, that they're good fighters, and she gets to know them just the way he does, but also that if she's not very careful, they can defeat her. And to me, that kind of ties into both the, like, both of them having so much more respect for the clones than most of the other Jedi do, but also, like, there's a lot of discussion how it looks like the Jedi just get totally punked in the third movie, Revenge of the Sith. And I think that's a fair statement. But I think that one possible interpretation of it is they so take for granted that they're the great Jedi and they're so much better than the clones. And so it just never occurs to them this is going to be a problem. I'm headcanoning some bad stuff pretty hard there. But, like, to me, it fits. It feels like the kind of thing that they'd be aware of in terms of thinking of, like, this shows how Ahsoka and Anakin both think of the clones so differently, and that Anakin is teaching her to think of the clones differently than the other Jedi do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it makes the rest of the Jedi getting punked better, but I think it makes the Jedi who survive being the ones who survive make more, like, internal sense, basically.
Right.
Like, Ahsoka specifically trained to survive an attack from these exact clones who are the ones that she had to survive an attack against, you know?
Right.
And Obi-Wan and Yoda also are a little more connected with the clones than,
right.
you know, some of the other Jedi. Although so was Master Plo, but I don't know, whatever. So, but yeah, it's like, it kind of makes it where it's like, okay, I can see why she did better than the other Jedi, but it still doesn't make it make sense why the other Jedi did. I mean, you know, like, oh, they took them for granted. Sure. But like, they're also supposed to be like Jedi. Like,
it's a step in that direction. It doesn't
affect
that.
Yeah. There's, it's something you can't rectify, but this mm-hmm. kind of like, just makes it a little less harshly nonsensical, I guess.
I liked seeing Kanan, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was a nice touch. And so what about the third episode? What'd you all think of that?
Well, I've read the Johnston book.
Okay, I was going to say, there is some controversy because this changes some details from the Johnston book about Ahsoka. So, yeah, if you want to start there.
Well, it's one of the very few Star Wars novels I've read, but it's just wonderfully done.
It's just called Ahsoka. And it's
Ahsoka. And the characterizations of the natives is done better in a book because it's a book. You know, it's not 3 minutes. Right, and I'll give it that's a problem. Then the other big change that I remember, and I haven't read the book in a couple of years, is in the book she stops the Inquisitor by using the Force and pulling the kyber crystals out of his saber using the Force. And there's just no way to really like do that in a cool way in a visual medium. So I was totally okay with that too. I didn't think any of the changes were all that bad. I thought it came out well, though it felt like it needed about 5 more minutes of story development to be good.
Yeah, I think first of all, I'll just say, I think the main controversy is because one of the things that, like a lot of that stuff, like the fight move she uses being changed, I'm always going to be okay with that kind of thing. Like, unless it's like a major thing about the character and they don't also convey that on screen.
Yeah, like Harry Potter episode 8.
Yeah, exactly. Like, some things do work much better on screen, and I'm totally okay with that. But in the book, it's just characterized a lot more, and she goes through a lot of like wrestling with will she or won't she engage with this Inquisitor. But even more so, one of the characters who's with her and who she's kind of protecting in that fight is distinctly labeled as I believe black, definitely a character of color, and also is very queer coded. And so I think a lot of people were very upset that character is taken out. And I want to learn more about that. I want to go back and read the book before I commented on it too. There's some level of like fire Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni hates Star Wars. He doesn't know anything about it. Like, which I think I'm not going to be able to go that far. I do think that there is, I think Star Wars is trying to do this complicated thing of having what it calls a unified canon, where the books, the comic books, the TV shows, and the movies all are equally canonical. And
that's just really hard to do.
Yeah, I think that's really hard to do. And like, I think a lot of people are mad on E.K. Johnson's behalf. I don't know if she said anything. I mean, she might not want to say anything. She wants to work for Star Wars. So yeah,
I looked it up and she defended the change.
Did she? Okay. And so I think,
but like, in a way that was like, I'm not going to be pissy to my boss, but still she did.
Okay. I mean, that's legit. Like, so yeah, I kind of feel like it's an important controversy. I think especially as like, I mean, I am queer, but I'm not person of color. I'm not kind of I didn't feel necessarily represented by the character they're talking about in the book in the way a lot of other people do. And so I'd say definitely check out some of those other voices, because I think there are some legitimate complaints there. But I think, there's not much. For me, it was, that sucks. I wish they'd done more, but there was still a lot in this episode I could enjoy. And it, I guess I never really, as much as I love the books, I've never believed that if on screen we see a retelling of something from the books, that we're going to get an exact like page for page version. I don't think it's possible. And in a lot of cases, I think it would come out pretty badly because books are written in a way to engage you very differently than a movie is going to be.
I mean, there's a reason that like the best movies that are adaptations are often from like short stories, not from novels. Right. Like a movie just isn't the same length as a novel. It's the same length as a short story, really. And a 15-minute TV episode definitely isn't, you know, the length of a book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my complaint with the Dooku stuff was I felt like it needed a lot more time and development. Here, I haven't read the Ahsoka book, so I didn't have those expectations and have anything to compare it to. This episode was very medium for me, where there were parts of it that I liked a lot. I thought that, like, you know, the dude who, like, basically called in the Inquisitor, like, I thought that was, like, I don't know. Like, it just, this felt like it didn't have enough time to sell me on the characters. You know, you're introducing these new characters. They don't end up being much of characters, really, right? There's not a lot of time to tell that, and they didn't necessarily they didn't succeed in that regard to me, right?
Right.
And then the Inquisitor being like, oh, you said there's a Jedi here, and now I'm going to burn down the whole village, and I'm mad at you. Like, I feel like the Inquisitors usually have a little bit more patience and cunning. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that also, I was just kind of like, eh. Ahsoka actually facing the Inquisitor, like, I thought that was cool. I thought the actual move, which I think she does in Rebels also, right, against one of those double-bladed sabers, is good. If she could go back in time and teach Qui-Gon that, that would be very helpful for him, also for Anakin. But using the Force to rip the kyber crystals out of the saber sounds incredibly badass. And actually, I mean, I feel like that could look really cool on screen. You know, like, I wouldn't mind seeing that as it's done. The exact way that characters fight, and particularly when it's something kind of clever like that, I think matters a lot more to me than to a lot of people. Like, like the change at the end of Harry Potter, I was like, in the books it makes all the sense, and in the movies it's just some generic, like, battle of power beams, basically, you know. Those things do bother me, but, like, on the other hand, I have kind of come to the, like, yeah, I don't expect the motion adaptation to be the same as, like, the written original, right? It's like, that's just not the way things are done, and it's like you're going to get a different version. It's very awkward trying to say all these different forms of media are, like, all part of one canon, you know? And that, yeah, that's why I like the idea of anthologies where, like, maybe this is just a story and it's similar to another story, but almost like it's someone else's telling of the same story. Yeah. And there's differences because that person maybe wasn't there. They're telling a story they heard from someone else, you know?
Right. I like that. And then also, because, I mean, the Kanan at the beginning of Bad Batch is also a change from the comic book. Mm. So, and someone was using that exact thing, is that this is told from the Bad Batch's perspective. Right. So maybe they got details wrong. I think part of it is, and Matthew, a lot of what you said helped kind of remind me of this, part of what makes the novel so good is it is all of this time of her wrestling with, who am I now that I've left the Jedi? And, you know, one of the big deals of it is, like, first of all, like, is it her job to go and save everything, or should she just kind of stay and hide? She's slowly coming to terms with the idea of what might have happened to Anakin, and is that Vader? I think that's only a small part of the book, and it may only be hinted at. Again, I've also not read it for a couple of years. But one of the biggest things is her trying to decide, like, what would it mean to be a Jedi again, or can I do something different? And so the fact that she because one of the things that happens in the book is not only does she rip the kyber crystals out of the lightsabers, but that we learn in those books, I think we've been told it in other places as well, but that Sith lightsabers are red, or dark saber lasers are red, because it's been they've taken that kyber crystal from a Jedi and corrupted it somehow.
Hmm.
And that the reason why she winds up with white lightsabers by the time of Rebels is because she basically cleansed, she purified, she like rebirthed those kyber crystals from the corruption that the Inquisitor had done to them. Mm. And so there's this really powerful story that makes her then using the white lightsabers in Rebels so powerful. Both because it is a rite of passage for her. This is the moment where she decides, I won't be a Jedi anymore, but I will be a light side Force user working for good. And I just felt like that we didn't get that at all. We didn't, like, I was able to put all the emotional weight of that onto the scene, but you wouldn't get any of that, I think, if you were just watching it.
I didn't get any of that. I was like, oh, she broke the lightsaber. Cool. Yeah. You know? Or didn't break
all it. All we got was her nodding.
Grab it.
Right.
Hmm?
All we got was her nodding. All the entire internal story that Matthew was just talking about was all her just nodding in answer to a question. Right. Are you ready then? Yeah.
Exactly.
It was still a pretty good nod.
It was a good nod. It was a good nod. Yeah. But, you know, maybe it's not exactly a binary question. Like, are you ready for what? Like, what are you going to do? You know, I don't know.
Right.
Also,
That is something that I think often frustrates me about more mythological stories, is the idea of like a character is on this journey, then a moment in time happens and their journey changes 90 degrees. Like, these things are gradual.
Right. When was this supposed to take place? Like a few years after Revenge of the Sith, or like...
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like it is long before she becomes Fulcrum. I mean, she certainly she looks much younger in this than she does in Rebels.
Yeah.
So I think this is supposed to be like 4 or 5 years.
Not a lot of years, basically, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Any other last comments on this episode or just kind of in general the Ahsoka arc?
Well, I'll say the myth thing that has to be said every time we talk about myth, which is every retelling of a myth is supposed to be different. So fuck canon.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like it.
I like that a lot, you know, and I think it, for me, it makes it easier to enjoy a wider range of stories. And it also feels like, you know, why are you retelling the same story unless you're going to bring something new to it? Right. Like it doesn't have to be a new event or whatever. It could just be a little different perspective. I feel like I'm here for that, you know?
Yeah. It's like I look at this through a number of different lenses, you know, through the lens of representation. I think it's a big deal that an important character was left out.
Yeah.
Through the lens of honoring the original stories, I think it's totally fair to say the retelling is going to be different, but I wish E.K. Johnson got a writer's credit for this and hopefully
I also thought she should. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there should be something of like this, because this story is very specifically drawn from her writing,
right?
You know? And so I wish there was more of a, like, for more, you know, more of an honoring of her. Star Wars is historically very bad at doing that, and that's a whole other issue. But yeah, I do think in terms of like the pure canonity of it, I don't have any problems with it. You know, I have those two objections, but I think the idea of the on-screen telling is never going to be exactly what it is in the books. I agree with you. I'm fine with it. It's different. It's myth. It's different people retelling it. That's fine.
Do you know that she didn't get a writer's credit? Did you look at the credits?
I looked through the credits. She did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The credits on screen.
Be like story by or something, you know.
Yeah. Or inspired by.
Right. Yeah.
I expect that the books are works for hire, and she was not contractually obligated to get anything, so they didn't give her anything because then they would.
Yeah.
Have
I mean,
give
they didn't
check
even.
To.
Yeah, they weren't even paying royalties on books that they'd acquired and continued publishing and making money from. Which is insane. Well,
and that's why I said this isn't like all of a sudden Star Wars or Disney is being bad to its writers. Like that, that's a very, this is one more in a long continuing story.
Yes.
But yeah. Yeah, I think for me, the only little thought
is... By the way, I looked it up, and the events of the episode are 1 year after Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, that's all?
Okay.
Okay.
That's interesting. I definitely felt like, and Dooku we'll talk more about in different episodes, I feel like the Dooku episodes taught me some new things about the character, and I learned more about the character. This, I felt like I got to see a lot of important moments that helped further, like just kind of like underline things I already knew about Ahsoka's character, and I greatly enjoyed getting to see those with the caveats we've mentioned. I don't feel like I learned anything new about her character, though, and that is something I think it would have been nice to have, like, a little bit of different understanding of her character after watching this than before.
Yeah, I'll co-sign
but,
that.
Yeah, other than that, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I hope we get more, and maybe actually I'll ask that as our kind of last question right after this. So we're back. Here's my one last quick question for you then. What other characters or what other story moments do you want to see in future Tales of the Jedi?
I would like to see something completely out of the timeline. You know, I would like to see something 1,000 years earlier. I would like to see a character I've never met before. Maybe a character that's brand new for the episode being done. I would just like that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I will always say. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see more just like Jedi doing Jedi things in the time of the Jedi, because that's alluded to a lot, and we don't really see that much, right? Yeah. We see just this one time of strife, and I feel like that is something that is it's like mythology within the mythology, and like maybe actually seeing those myths, or like it could even be a telling, you know, you could have it framed as like one of the characters we know telling a story about, you know, one of those characters in the past. I'm going to throw Darth Bane out there because that's just, you know, I've heard good things. But which is the opposite, I guess, of Jedi doing Jedi things, Sith doing Sith
things. Well, but there's definitely some Jedi who are very involved in his story. Right, but like, I think also a framing device, like if this was all like Yoda telling stories to Padawans or to younglings, you know, because first of all, he's got 900 years. He's got a lot of the history.
Saw some stuff.
The High Republic is giving us a lot of that history. We could get some of those stories. But yeah, you're right. It'd be fun to see something completely unrelated, you know, something. And maybe it like gives us little hints of some other stories. I also, though, think that I would have liked to see more. Like, I feel like we see our main characters. It's a kind of thing that I think is often hard, is when your main characters are people who are supposed to be different from the norm, but we don't see much of the norm.
Right.
You know, I'd like to see more of just like, you know, Plo Koon and like the clones he was with, you know, or, you know, some of those others, or some who we didn't meet, you know. I think that could have been great. I'm going to anger some people here because I have a love for a character. He's a terrible, terrible person, but I have a love for a character most people hate, Pong Krell. And I just ignore the fourth. Pong Krell is the big frog dude who basically is happy to throw the lives of the clones away.
Yeah.
I just throw out the last episode. The last episode of his arc where he's just like, I just want power. The Sith are going to win. Like, right. F that. Because he's a very fascinating character when he's presented as he is so deep into the I don't care about their lot. Like, I cannot think about the humanity of these clones that I just think about them as numbers. I just order them into battle, like all this stuff. I'd love to see how he becomes that. But I'm going to get 10 angry emails for that, so who knows?
I think that's optimistic, but yeah.
We'll see. I'll write 5 angry emails to myself just to kind of.
I'll write another 5 and you're good.
There you go. Yes, any other last comments on any of this? We can wrap up. All right. Well, thank you all. For those, if you want to know more about where to find both of these wonderful people, check out Andor Episode 8. You hear all that, but also just I'll have some links to both of their works in the show notes. Of course, I am The Ethical Panda, theethicalpanda.com. You'll find Facebook, Twitter. Let us know what you think. We love the feedback. Send it to us an email. I'll probably do a feedback episode about Andor and Tales of the Jedi coming up fairly soon. So send us in those thoughts. Keep your eyes peeled for the next time we're going to do Tales of the Jedi Dooku Edition. And most importantly, have a good day.